everybody. Welcome back to the Midnight Terrors podcast. My name is Kevin. Here is another episode for you, a very highly anticipated and special one, because I am back with normally my live co-host, but you've seen her and heard her on a few different episodes of MTP, and get ready because you're going to see her, hear her voice a lot more now, and you know her, you love her. Jules is back.
Yay! Ha! That's the crowd going wild. Everyone's amazed. They're happy to have me. Yeah, I thought I could do a better sound than that, but all that came out was okay. Y'all get the point.
That's okay. But, thank you for bearing with me through my horrible stumbling of words there.
Oh, it happens to the best of us, and I'm sure I will stumble as well, just like the best final girls. We all have to stumble. We all have to trip and fall. Just get the fuck back up, okay? That's the important thing. But I'm excited because I have challenged myself and Kevin this year. I was like, you know what? Obviously, I do the live events. I've done a bunch of the interviews. Occasionally, we throw in a fun episode like 13 Ghosts. Yes, that's a plug. Go check out that episode. I'm obsessed with that episode. But you know what? I was like, Kevin, I feel like I need to do more behind the scenes recordings with you that's not at live events. So I challenge you, starting this month, every other month, let's pick a movie. So I picked this first one. Kevin's going to pick next month's in February. I'm going to pick March, and then we'll go back and forth like that throughout 2025 so we can kind of expose ourselves. Not in that way. We do that enough around each other, you know, at our shows. We do. But we want to expose ourselves to maybe some of our favorite horror movies, maybe horror movies we've seen only once or twice and want to revisit. Maybe we'll pick something freaking random we've never seen and just want to watch. But so Kevin's thinking about his for February, but for January, I wanted to kick things off with something we've been hemming and hawing and talking about for a long time, which is our Alfred Hitchcock series. And the first movie we shall be talking about is 1963's The Birds.
I hope that's a nod to the wonderful teaser thing that we see before movies at the Citadel Mall with Anthony Hopkins.
Yes. Which we researched this, okay? And apparently there was a movie where he played Hitchcock. I think it was around 2015. So now I need to go see that. Because okay. Nikki and I, every time, we're like, what is this? Why is this a movie coming out? And none of us ever know. But apparently it has already come out, folks, and it's been 10 years. So, but I thank you for making my head get big that you recognize that silly. It was that exact thing that I was mimicking. So go YouTube that if y'all haven't seen it. It's the Anthony Hopkins, Alfred Hitchcock. Before you go see a movie at the theaters, it's the little silence your phone little tidbit there that they do.
Because it makes everyone psycho.
Yes, classic. And it's that good. They still are playing it 10 years later. You can't really beat that, folks. So,
good.
So yeah, so definitely have to dive into that. Who knows? Maybe we'll watch that and can do an episode on that at some point as part of the Hitchcock series.
Which is how we'll forever say it now. Yes. But yeah, no, I'm excited to have you back. We've been talking a lot about, you know, expanding your role on the show to do, you know, monthly episodes. Everyone that knows you are very, very busy, a woman of many talents and always working on a million and one things. But we were just talking about, you know, getting you more on MTP. You know, all of our listeners and myself love having you on all the time. So, you know, we're happy to do this. And, you know, I think a once a month basis, if not more, when we can is just going to be fantastic. And, this is also, hold on, I'm also going to make sure my computer doesn't reset while we're recording.
That would be bad. As much as I want to do this whole thing a second time, I don't want to miss these prize gem of moments we already have going on. So
yes, but no, I'm excited. I you know, the show is always built around like celebrating the things we love, but also adding more to the pile. What a great place to start with the master of suspense. This was your idea to do the Hitchcock series, and I could not say yes fast enough. I mean, it's Alfred Hitchcock, so but I'm not super familiar with his filmography and what he's brought to cinema, so I'm excited to learn as we go through these picks. Can you tell us a little bit about what led to wanting to do Alfred Hitchcock for the first segment?
No, just kidding. I will. So it's honestly a movie that I remember seeing. I think my ex-wife wanted to show it to me years ago. So we all know how exes are, and I wanted to pair this movie with a new experience and not it just be associated with her. So I was like, and I remembered liking it, but I didn't remember much about it. Who knows? I could have fallen asleep. We could have gotten into a fight in the middle of it. You know how that goes, folks. Toxicity, get out of it while you can.
Yes.
So just that, and then kind of like what you said, obviously I'm a huge fan of the movie Psycho. I remember renting that at Blockbuster. I'm showing my age many years ago. Gosh, probably when I was in early high school. And of course, Kevin knows I'm absolutely obsessed with Bates Motel, which is the show that is essentially how Norman Bates became Norman Bates. So that's absolutely something we're going to have to dive into. But I was like,
Yes.
let's not be cliche. Let's not start with Psycho. Like, let's start with something else. So I was like, let's do the birds. But just like you, Kevin, I have not really seen a ton of Hitchcock movies. So I really just want to educate myself. He is a master. He's just someone who's such highly regarded. So I figured it's just where we need to go as a podcast is delve into a series like this and kind of get to know one of the masters of suspense, horror, and thrill.
And I think, looking at Alfred Hitchcock, the man lived an incredible, lifespan and a career. And I think looking into research for him, I did not realize how far back his film career goes. Like, The Birds is a classic from his filmography, but this is way late into his career. He did his first unfinished and then lost short film, Number 13, in 1922.
Wow. That's amazing. So that's already 40 years in by the time you get to the birds. So that's quite a filmography. So this movie is 62 years old, which is absolutely nuts to think about. And what a monumental year. Like, obviously, this week was Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And I listened to his famous speech, I Have a Dream, on Monday to celebrate that day. And I realized his I Have a Dream speech was said for the first time in 1963, the same week we're doing the birds. So I thought that was interesting, just what a historic year for this movie to be made. And to think and to reflect when I'm listening to Dr. King's words and when I'm watching this movie. This is only 62 years old, guys. This is within our family's, my living grandparents, their lifetime, almost our really my mom's lifetime. She was only two. But it's just amazing when you look at these movies and you listen to these speeches, and it feels so long ago. It was not that long ago. So it's fascinating to see the styles, how they have changed. And I mean, not just clothing styles, the acting styles of this movie. It's very different. So if y'all are going in expecting people to be acting like they're in 2025, you're going to be disappointed. Go in expecting, for me, overacting. And I'm a fan of overacting because I do Rocky Horror. So.
Well, I mean, I think that's also, something I noticed with watching this. The only two films from Hitchcock that I've seen are Psycho and The Birds. But I think part of his genius is that you can watch these films today in 2025, and yeah, you're probably going to notice some acting or some special effects things, but damn it if they're not grounded in reality and going to strike a chord with you. I saw a lot of that with The Birds, which I guess one thing I didn't know, this is based off a short story.
Yes, I actually read that too, which is amazing. So we definitely need to check that out. It's a story by Daphne. I'm going to butcher this name. Daphne
Something like
Demaurier.
that.
I'll just spell it. So it's Daphne as usual, and then Dumaurier for those people who want to look that up. But yes, it is a story. So definitely want to check that out and see how it compares and how Hitchcock expanded upon it.
Yeah, and then the screenplay is written by someone named Evan Hunter, and it says, He was told by Hitchcock to develop new characters and a more elaborate plot while keeping to the author's title and concept of unexplained bird attacks.
And I think that's part of the mystery here, which, gosh, where do we even start? But it's like, why are the birds doing this? So it's exactly what it sounds like. It's birds attacking humans. The birds, there's an ornithologist in this movie, which I think is brilliant. She comes in like halfway through and she's just in disbelief. There's no way this is a cur what? There's no way. And everyone's like, dude, it's happening. I don't care what you think is or is not happening. It is happening. And she's just blown away by it. And they refer to it as basically a war on humans by the birds. So to me, this is instantly terrifying because of just like what you said, Kevin, this would be scary 1,000 years ago. It'll be scary 1,000 years from now because it is birds. Birds are everywhere. It's real. I will take an example from our real life. Anyone on our cast listening will understand. At our rehearsal space, I will walk out of our office where we rehearse, and there will be 100 birds sitting on the telephone line right outside of my office. What is keeping them from not attacking me? Because let's be honest, humans really are the shittiest thing on this planet. We're destroying the planet. So in my mind, the birds have every reason to attack us because they want to live. They want to survive. But that is part of the mystery of the movie, is just why? Why are they attacking humans? And it's a lot. I have a bunch of notes here, and I did like first attack, second attack, and then by the end, I'm like, I think the eighth attack. Like, there's just so many attacks, you start losing count. And it's also hard, what is the beginning of one attack and the end of the other? Because sometimes there's multiple attacks in the same scene.
Well, the ornithologist, has great dialogue in here talking about that, where she talks about birds were here, thousands and thousands of years before us. They're going to be here, long after us. And, we're encroaching upon them. And they never really give you an exact reason in the movie why the birds are doing what they're doing. So it does kind of force you to go inward to be like, what are we doing wrong to encroach upon nature and how can we fix it?
And I'm basically a real life poison ivy. So I'm like, y'all do your thing. Like, whatever y'all need to do to keep the planet going. If that's killing us, okay, more power to you. But again, I'm a poison ivy type, so you probably shouldn't ask for my opinion. You should probably ask a normal human. But I thought these numbers, keep in mind, 62 years ago, so the ornithologist says how horrific this would be if this was true, the bird war against humanity, because at this time, again, this was in 63. She said there are 8,650 species of birds in the world. And then she goes on to say there are 5 billion, yes, billion, 5 billion, 750 million in the United States alone. She then goes on to say there's 100 billion birds in the world. She says if that happens, we won't stand a chance. How can we possibly fight them? So it's really, I mean, I just got goosebumps. It's really, this is such a classic, timeless horror thriller. And just that alone, it just sums up why this is so terrifying. The numbers, and they're attacking you from the air. You can't go anywhere. You can't run out to your car. You can't go to the store. You can't do anything. They would be attacking you.
Well, I also have an experience to pull from, and I actually showed you a picture of this at one of our rehearsals. Right as we were building up to doing this episode, a bunch of birds just appeared in my driveway and
Oh my
traveled
gosh.
in a flock, like in unison to different parts of my yard until I went inside. Like it was actually kind of terrifying.
Well, this is again, you and I are linked cosmically, as we already know by this point, but I had the birds moment this week. Those of you in Charleston and really the Southeast, we have had this winter storm that's literally shut down the city for about 4 days, if not more than that, by the time this will be done. So I was going outside at the beginning of the week, right before it was starting to get bad, and I heard this little tap, 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 tap. And I was like, oh, it must be a woodpecker. We have a lot of really beautiful woodpeckers around here. So I looked up. And no, it was a little bird. I am not an ornithologist, so who knows what a swift, a sparrow, whatever the ornithologist would say. But there was a little bird just tapping, tap, 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 tap on our upper window over and over again, and has stayed there all week. I kid you not. Every time we go out there, I'm waiting for the glass to be broken.
Ugh.
So I'm assuming again, birds. We all know all animals are superior to us in so many ways. You know that little bird, I'm guessing, was picking up on the weather shifting and maybe almost, I don't know if he was trying to find a place like to stay. If he's like, I need to get in there, that looks cozy and warm. I don't know what it was, but it's been a little trippy, and I would not be surprised if I go out there tomorrow and he's still out there. He's been sitting in a tree and then going over to my window and tap tapping on it and flittering away, and then he keeps doing it. So it's very interesting that we're recording the birds this week, and there's actively a bird trying to get into my house, which is one of the iconic scenes of the movie. I'm
Yep.
sure we'll touch on at some point here.
Well, another famous Kevin story was the one time I went to Europe, and I don't know how to phrase this any differently, so I just say it as is, was the time, excuse me, I was dive bombed by a European pigeon for my Austrian sausage.
I mean, there's no other way to say that. I
Like,
mean,
I literally, people are like, excuse me? And I'm like, no, I bought a long piece of sausage from a food stand and
course you did.
with dipping sauce, and it was too big. I couldn't finish it, so I went to throw it away, and I looked down and there was a pigeon right there on the street. I took one look at it, and it just goes and dives right at my head for the food.
Wow. Well, thank God you had something to offer it and that you're still here. Because he could have been diving for you.
I walked back with feathers all over me too. It was just
Oh
wonderful.
my gosh. Oh my gosh. Well, I'm glad you survived. Not many do, you know. And that's so let's talk about the attacks a little bit, because they start small and then they really just escalate from there. So correct me if I'm wrong, but towards the beginning, the main character, which we have to mention, Tippi Hedren plays Melanie Daniel. So Melanie is this main character. And so she is in a boat coming back from dropping off these little lovebirds, which is fascinating to me, this whole storyline where so these two people, so you have Melanie and Mitch is the lead. Which, by the way, if you look in, I think it's like the Amazon Prime description, it literally says after a chance meeting, talking about these two people, which reminds me of Rocky Horror, after a chance meeting. So shit will go down after a chance meeting, folks. Okay. So let's acknowledge that and accept that. Be careful if you have a chance meeting with somebody. Okay. Shit's gonna go down. So just backing up a little bit. So basically they have a chance meeting in a pet store and they have this little gag going back and forth. And it's fascinating to me that they're just so into this gag culture where they want to pull one over on each other instantly. Talk about the most elaborate gag I've ever seen with a stranger in history. She buys these birds that he was talking about wanting, goes to Bodega Bay, basically a different part of the state in California, it seems like, and takes these lovebirds, asks around town, does this whole thing to find out exactly where this is, talks to the school teacher, talks to people at the stores. This woman is just hell-bent on pulling one over, a prank on this guy she just met. So she even goes as far as renting a boat, and this is why I backed up to explain all of this. She rented a boat to go all the way across to his house to drop the little lovebirds off, and on her way back to shore to leave after her elaborate gag has been successful and they're smiling and laughing at each other, she's attacked. It's the first attack. She gets hit in the boat coming back from dropping off the lovebirds. It's a gull. So it starts pretty innocently. You're like, okay, well, maybe, that gull was just flying low and accidentally hit somebody. But it just continues really to escalate from there. Which leads into the first, what I'm calling the first big attack, was at Kathy's birthday party. There was all the goals. And so again, we have Melanie and Mitch are basically our leading lady and leading dude. Mitch has a much younger sister. Who is the one getting the lovebirds? And it was her, Kathy's, the little sister's birthday party. And all the kids are attacked, at that, that event. So that's when it really starts kicking off, and it just spirals completely out of control from there.
Yes, and Hitchcock stays true to his name of the master of suspense, because it literally is that. It just builds and builds and builds throughout the movie. And one thing I noticed with the opening credits of the movie, I noticed it as the film went on, and there's a part I think where it really gets cemented, but there's like next to no music in this movie, and a lot of it is just playing on your senses. And I think that Hitchcock shows you that in the very beginning with the opening credits. And it's just the sounds and images of birds fluttering, like a huge swarm of birds fluttering around. And then when they attack, it's the same way. Normally in modern day horror, there'd be like a big score, big cuts to gore. But no, at Kathy's birthday, like it's just the sound of fluttering wings and screams. And there's something about that that just makes it that much more terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely. And this kind of goes into talking about the sounds of birds. I was interested in looking up, obviously, if there was animal abuse on the set, because guys, these were real birds. There were also mechanical birds used, but there is a little bit of a dark history to this movie, which I want to actually read. I didn't realize Tippi Hedren, Melanie Daniels, she wrote a memoir. And she
Oh,
talks
wow.
about this. So I would love for us to read that book at some point and review it on the podcast. Because
Absolutely.
at the end of the day, there's going to be fake news, false reports. Hitchcock has his side of things. The crew has their side of things. Tippi has her side of things. I'm going to believe the victim, period, at the end of the day. That's where I'm going to believe. So I want to read that book to see what really happened. But I, as far as the animal abuse side goes, I'm sure birds were hurt. I mean, they're attacking people. Like, that's part of the dark history that Tippi goes into in her memoir is, they were really attacked by birds. Birds were thrown at their faces. The actors actually had birds, live birds, hurled at them. So think about that, guys. Like when you're watching this movie, a lot of this is real. A lot of this fear. And I get where a master crafter like Hitchcock is coming from, where he's like, what could be more authentic than true fear from a real bird flying at your face? But apparently the crew was so uncomfortable, especially leading up to the iconic classic bedroom scene where Tippi gets violently attacked. It's her big personal attack scene at the end of the movie. And apparently the crew was just really disturbed by all of that, and no one felt like they could do much because it's Hitchcock. And like you said, Kevin, by the 60s, he's had a long career.
Yeah,
He's Hitchcock by that point.
he's a household name by this point.
You have to respect that dude, right? So, it was very uncomfortable for a lot of people, including Tippi, obviously. So I really want to read that memoir. But as far as the animal abuse goes, I was pleased to see, and again, everyone fact check stuff, right? Because the internet's the internet. But it seems like they actually had the ASPCA there on site when they were filming this, which is great. So there was at least an
Oh,
advocate
good.
for the birds there. I was very happy to see that. And they built an aviary to help treat injured birds, which is great. But then you go, but why were they injured? Probably from being hurled at people's faces.
Well, that answers my question, because the whole time I'm watching this, I'm like, all of this just feels so real. So I'm wondering, like, how do you get, like, so one of my favorite shots, jumping ahead a little bit, is before the schoolhouse attack. There's all those like crows perched on the playground like setup behind Tippy, and that scene, first of all, is unsettling as hell. Like it is so scary and ominous, but like it they're re they look like real birds piled on top of each other, and I'm like, how does he get that? So to know that they're real birds, I'm just like, oh shit.
And I believe there were mechanical birds as well. So that's what Tippi was believing would be used for that bedroom scene where the mechanical
Oof.
birds, but wait for it, the day of. the day of filming, she was told, "Oh, the birds, I don't know if the mechanical birds weren't working for whatever reason, they weren't going to be used and they had to use real birds." So she didn't even have time to mentally prepare for that. That was the
Ugh.
day of. Imagine, like, you and I have limited set experience.
Yeah.
Imagine when you're on set and you're being told something like that the day of.
Yeah, and that scene is hard to watch just as a viewer too, so knowing that, oof.
So Hitchcock actually hired animal handler Ray Berwick to train hundreds of live birds for the film. So these were actually wild-caught crows, ravens, seagulls, and sparrows. So kudos to this dude for training all of those guys. Kudos. I can't even imagine. He's clearly a master at his craft. But again, when we're sitting here behind a screen, being scared or laughing or whatever we're doing at movies, don't forget what the people and the animals on this screen actually went through to put this product in front of you.
Yeah.
So I really just want to say thank you to all the birds, and for Tippi and all of the actors in this film who found it. I'm sure there were contracts and everything involved, but they pushed through and they did it. So and we have this amazing piece of horror history for the rest of time. But you're absolutely right. It looks believable because it's real.
Yeah. And funny story about Tippi Hedren. I did not know this until actually Mama Midnight told me about it. I did not know that she was related to Dakota Johnson.
Oh, wow. How so?
She is, I believe, her grandmother.
Very cool.
I think, yeah, I think she Dakota is 2 generations after her.
Wow. Very cool.
And Tippi Hedren is still alive. She's in her 90s too, so
Aw.
she's living an incredible life too. So
Good.
what an illustrious career she's had. I did have a note in here that you mentioned earlier, Mitch and Melanie's interplay. Probably my favorite scene is them in the restaurant with that between those two, where their game is just trying to kind of backhand flirt with each other. And they just have this game of like trying to one up. And like, I think the line from Mitch is like, "You must really like me." And she says, "I loathe you. I wrote you a letter about it. What did it say? None of your business."
Yes, I love that. Yeah, their back and forth to me is very unique. Like I said, starting out with they clearly both like to play games and they're instantly pranking and pulling gags with each other. It's a very fun dynamic that quickly takes a turn because they're fighting for their lives. And guys, people die in this movie. Like literally, people die. That's one of the first things that really makes the town, I feel, take it seriously. Is when a neighbor is found dead with his eyes pecked out. So, I mean, yeah. So, this does, it's again, it's nothing like the 2025 gore of today, but there are some pretty gory scenes. And that's one of them that sticks out into my mind if you're a fan of gore.
And again, no big musical score, no big like jump cut, just straight cut to a man with hollowed out eyes. I literally like jumped out of my seat watching it.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's there's so many like I wrote so many notes on this. There's so many great like shots. And again, I just love the build up to the big massacre. It's slow, but it builds tension.
It does.
And it's appropriately slow because there's little things being planted with like, "Oh, my chickens won't eat the feed that I got." And like, there's nothing wrong with them. Or like there's the random gull attack, and then there's the neighbor, and then just little seeds being planted throughout until it builds up to the big slaughter in the town.
Oh yeah. The gas station, there's actually a gas spill that leads to explosions and cars blowing up and people probably dying. A lot of that is they don't really go into specifically, but I'm assuming there's deaths from that. It's really a horrific scene. And like you're saying, the buildup is just wonderful because it's how it would happen in real life. It really is. You would start noticing little signs here and there and the birds, they're acting peculiar. I can never say the birds again for the rest of my life without just like the bird. Oh, look at the birds over there. I'm always going to think about the birds every
Yeah.
time. But it's absolutely amazing. But let's touch on, we've talked about some of the cast. So we've obviously talked a lot about Tippi Hedren, duh, as we should, legend. But Rod Taylor is who plays Mitch Brenner. And Nikki, while we were watching this, she was like, God, who is he reminding me of? It's some actor. And guess what? I knew instantly. I said Robin Williams. Go back, Kevin, and watch him. Watch his face and his expressions. It's creepy. So then Nikki goes on a spiral on the depths of the internet. Apparently, there's a conspiracy theory that this man, Rod Taylor, is Robin Williams' father. It's an actual conspiracy theory. So nail on the head. So y'all watching this, see if you notice any of that kind of stuff. I thought that was interesting. We also have to mention who plays Mitch's mom, Lydia Brenner. Jessica Tandy, folks. I mean, she's just an icon. She, to me, growing up, she is Ninny Threadgood from Fried Green Tomatoes. She'll always be Ninny Threadgood. So seeing her much younger and just getting to delve more into her filmography, was absolutely wonderful. So just a really, really great cast. Very interesting. So
Which I also, while watching this, what again, we talked about Hitchcock tasked the screenplay writer with developing more characters and making a more intricate story. You would expect something like this, but this happened with Psycho too. You would expect that something like this, like, is probably just like a gore fest. And no, there's a lot of character development here. One of the most powerful scenes, I think, is Lydia, Mitch's mom, when she has the heart to heart with Tippy in the bedroom, where she talks about losing her husband and she's so protective of her son because she doesn't want to be alone. But they have this talk about carrying on, and by the end, like, her and Tippy are friends. It's just incredible, and you don't expect stuff like that in movies like this all the time, but that's what Hitchcock is also great at, is Psycho has a lot of that too, lots of character development.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a lot of depth there. And I remember that scene. She's like basically saying, I don't know if I like you yet, but we'll see. And Tippy's just straight up like, well, do you? She is, in my mind, that perfect woman that's finally rising to that occasion, for Mitch with his mother, who's obviously extremely protective. And you see that throughout the movie. And just like what you say, by the end of it, the big bedroom scene that we keep talking about, this is when Melanie Daniels, Tippy, is attacked solo. A lot of the scenes leading up to that are either very small or she's with other people. This is her big attack scene. So after that attack, Lydia is one of the people caring for her very genuinely and wanting to be right there with her, obviously, literally taking her under her arm, helping her out to the car. Which why don't we talk about that a little bit? That whole scene, basically the bedroom scene. It's essentially, which I want to know, why are you going upstairs, Melanie Daniels? Is this not the number one horror movie question? What, don't go in there. Why are you going in there?
So I gotta admit, I watched this at night, and anyone, well, you know this about me, because you're my best friend, but anyone who doesn't know me should know I'm a jumpy person. And I watching this in the middle of the night. They've hunkered down in the house, and the power's out, and they're trying to keep Kathy calm. There's all of a sudden in the darkness this little fluttering of wings going on, and Melanie is going to go walk around to see what it is, and I don't know what I'm in for. I've never seen this. So she's walking around and she goes up the stairs and she opens the door to the bedroom where she hears it, and it's Melanie, not Melanie, Kathy's bedroom. And there's like a fake out shot. She looks up and there's a hole in the roof where all the birds have come through. And then it pans down to the room is just covered in birds. And I literally like jumped again when I, because that reveal just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, absolutely. So she basically goes in there to see what it is. Again, why though? I think you know what it is. I think you might know what it is, and it's a fuckload of birds ready to peck your eyeballs out. But she's brave. She goes in there, checks it out, and then she basically gets trapped because she enters the room and then the door closes just from the weight of herself and the birds coming at her, essentially. So she's just trapped in there. She's trying to open the door. She can't. She's getting pelted. I mean, it is literally, I don't even know. We'd have to pause the movie and count the number of birds. It's probably close to 100 in that room. And again, keep in mind what we talked about earlier when she's filming the scene. She thought these would be mechanical birds. They are not. The mechanical birds weren't working or whatever other reason that they gave that day. These are real birds being thrown at her over and over again. So a lot of the terror and the uncertainty you see from Tippy is probably real. So I thought she was a goner. I'm
Me
not gonna
too.
die. I thought she was a fucking goner. I was like, well, there she goes. Okay. But Mitch and every basically they run out up there and they're able to wedge her out of the door, get her back down. They get antiseptic, they treat her. And I was so curious how this movie would end. And I do want to talk about the ending because I love movies like this that just end and you just don't have a lot of answers. Because that's just how life is. It really is. It's not always going to wrap up perfectly with a bow. But basically, what are they going to do? They Mitch runs out to the car and he's able to listen to the radio, which basically says, nobody knows what we're going to do yet. There's a bunch of roads blocked. A lot of people have gotten out, but there's still some people stuck. Imagine being one of those quote unquote some people. It's like, yep, I'm still here and my whole house is full of birds. And keep in mind, leading up to this last serious attack against Melanie, I mean, Mitch and the family, and it was mainly Mitch, I think, again, looking at gender roles back in the 60s, it was a lot of the women caretaking and hiding and more of him doing like the actual fighting the birds. And he tried to cover every single window, every door. They had furniture up. Like, that's how scary it was, guys. It's like they were literally being attacked. So basically by the time Melanie survives this, she clearly needs hospital attention, and you're trapped in a house in a bay, a town that's blocked off. I don't even know where they're going. So he's able to get the car. That whole scene, man, the last, it's probably like the last 10 or so minutes of the movie is Mitch tiptoeing. There's thousands of birds everywhere.
So much tension as he's just, and it's just shots of him walking through the birds, and at any moment they could be, set off, because they've established this plot line in the movie where the birds' attacks just come at random. You can't really predict them, you can't prepare for them, you don't know how long they're going to last. So at any moment they could just swarm, and it's absolutely terrifying. And you were talking about the ending not being a tidy bow. You know what movie I actually had flashbacks to when watching this was one that I think you and I both love, is The Mist.
I knew you were going to say that because we're creepy. Okay. When you were, I was like, he's going to say the mist. I love the mist because, again, it's kind of a shitty ending where for a lot of people, it's a sad ending. It's an ominous ending. You don't really know what's going on. But yeah, it really is very much like that, where the characters, you don't know if they're gonna make it to a hospital, if they're gonna make it out of Bodega Bay. You don't know if Melanie's gonna die in the car. I'm wondering if she's gonna get some sort of a bird flu, or who knows? Like, that could have been a spinoff, is all the attack victims get a flu and become zombies. That would have been epic. But that's basically the ending, is Mitch is able to, like, he's literally like ninja style, like tiptoeing through these birds, gets the car around and is able to get his family and the new love of his life. Because I mean, how do you not bond over this? Like, y'all, I'm sure y'all are tied for the rest of your life. So gets Melanie in the car, and the end of the movie is literally them just all in that little car, which has it's like a convertible. So the top isn't even sound, but on top of that, they're already busting through glass. That car is not safe. So basically, you just see them slowly driving through the birds, and it's just scary. Hopefully the people, because obviously there were roadblocks, hopefully that's preventing people from going into Bodega Bay. So I'm assuming they'll be able to get out. But again, you just have to hope, because you don't know. You just see them driving off literally into the birds.
Well, they also established early on with a character that we haven't mentioned yet, that the stakes are like anything goes. Like, the reason I think we think that Melanie could go down is because we spent a lot of time with Annie, the teacher,
Yes,
and
Annie.
she goes down like in a very brutal, like scary way. You know, she's torn apart in front of Kathy to try to when she's trying to save her, and like I'm like, oh shit, I don't know who's off limits at this point. I don't think anybody is.
And again, talking about, because obviously this is a horror thriller, there's drama in this movie. There really is, going into what you were talking about with the other stories, because Annie is, again, this seems like a very small little town, Bodega Bay. It's surrounded by water. She is the teacher at the schoolhouse.
Yes.
Really old school schoolhouse, almost looks like an old church. It's one of the big attack scenes towards kind of the middle of the movie. But you meet Annie relatively early on in the movie, when Melanie first gets into town, and you slowly realize Annie has a history with Mitch, so there's a little bit of that jealousy. But I love it because Melanie and Annie don't let that get in the way. I thought that was so cool. Like, a
Yeah.
lot of women would get catty over that and just instantly hate each other. They didn't. I never got that vibe from them. Annie was just so forthcoming, like, that's done. He didn't want any more. I just like being around him as a friend, and was so honest about it.
Yep.
And then Melanie is so new in this budding relationship. She doesn't have much stake on the table yet, but I just thought that was really cool how they played that. Like, there wasn't the cattiness or the bitchiness. They were able to, in that short time, I mean, by the time Annie passes away, that's what, a 24 to 48 hour period. They had only been friends for that long. So in that
Yeah.
amount of time, there really was a sweet, true friendship that I feel happened between Melanie and Annie. So Annie absolutely needs to be mentioned. So she's a character just like what you're saying. You think some of these characters will be safe. Absolutely not. Because after the school attack, basically, Annie essentially dies, protecting her students, and she's able to take Kathy, the younger sister of Mitch, to safety. And then again, the classic, why did you do that? Why did you go out there? They went outside to see what was going on. They had heard the explosion from the gas station we mentioned earlier, and that's when the birds attacked, and basically Annie died, essentially pushing Kathy inside, so saving
Yeah.
her student. So yeah, it's so multifaceted. There's all these different relationships. There's obviously romance, there's friendships, there's mother and daughter, mother and son, teacher and student. There's all these really cool relationships that you see throughout the film that add a lot of texture and story to it.
Well, and that's another thing. Excuse me. Another thing I really appreciate about this movie, you're talking about, a lot of the female characters in here, and this being a movie from the 60s, this movie, me, I mean, me as a huge supporter of women, huge ally, and feminist. I love strong female characters, and all of them in the movie are like that. Like Annie, yes, has that history, but she's not defined by just her ex relationship with Mitch. Melanie is able to one up Mitch like at every turn with, the flirting and, playing hard to get and, being strong in who she is. Lydia is, wanting to overcome the death of her husband and, wanting to make a life for herself as well. And again, that's another thing I just really appreciate, especially again, since this movie came out in the 60s.
Absolutely. No, I 100% agree. And Annie was played by Suzanne Pleshette. And I'm not familiar with her other movies, but I'd be curious to see what else she did. Because she was a really, really nice character to have on there.
She was.
She really was. And I hated to see her pass away. But hey, I mean, that's what a good teacher should do, is protect her students, and that's exactly what happened. So we did see many deaths throughout it. So the birds are out to get you, man. They really are. And again, you never quite know why. That could be part of the bigger meaning to this movie, is to leave you thinking. Of course, again, being an animal activist and just a proponent of our world and being a green person, that's where my mind goes to, is some sort of animalistic urge that the birds felt to purge the world of the main living thing that's harming it. So that's where my mind goes. I'd be curious to see if Hitchcock had any more meaning behind the scenes, because it honestly doesn't need it. It's just scary. It's just scary. You don't need a meaning to it. That's part of the scariness of it.
Yeah, I mean, really what it boils down to is like it's a very, humans versus nature type thing. And Mother Nature, she's gonna put humans in their place, and that's essentially what this movie does. And yeah, I mean, I love that we don't have a real explanation why everything is happening. We never get that, and it's just it'll either continue, maybe they'll get away from it when they leave Bodega Bay, because they do say that on the radio there's a unusually high concentration of bird attacks in Bodega Bay. But who knows what's waiting in other cities. And we talk about the Big City Massacre. That was the one thing I did know about the movie, is I had seen the clip of her hiding in the phone booth.
Which is also terrifying because, again, it's glass, and it's not super safe, but you got to work with what you can.
And also a creepy shot too. Really, this movie turns into a siege movie with the assaults on the house, which is something I love in horror, because one setting, it's almost like contained thriller at that point, which The Mist does that as well. I feel like The Mist probably got a little influence from the birds, actually.
Yeah, probably so.
They'd be
That'd
a
be interesting to look into.
great double feature. It's just like the other one is more supernatural in nature. But just this city massacre, and then when they get to the house, just the image of the beaks pecking through the wood is so creepy.
Well, because you realize in that moment, because obviously they've tried to pull the shutters and they've nailed planks of wood up and they've moved furniture and they're doing whatever they can, and you think, oh, this is safe, right? They're keeping the fire hot, which reminds me of Krampus, obviously. Keep the fire hot so Krampus or the birds can't come down. So Mitch is throwing like tons of fire and even says, if we run out of wood, we'll break up the furniture, so yeah, it's funny how movies remind us of others, but you feel like this is pretty safe, right? It's like, okay, the birds come down the fireplace, there's the fire, all the windows are covered, but then you see them, like what you said, pecking through the front door. There's so many of them. And if you think about it too, which I don't think woodpeckers were necessarily part of this, but a lot of birds, they can chip at wood pretty strongly, and they sure as hell were. And then going into the bedroom scene, the whole roof was caved in. I mean, just from the weight of thousands of birds, let alone if they're all up there pecking and pecking. You were not safe, even in a house that you have tried to prep to the best of your ability. They were not safe, and they knew that, and that's why they had to eventually take their chance and leave. Because if they stayed there, they were going to starve to death at some point, or the birds were going to keep finding their ways in. They were already in the upper bedroom. All they would have to do is peck through the door at that point, which they were already working on the front door. So.
And a question that popped into my head as I was watching this. So we cut back to the lovebirds a lot. We draw a lot of attention
Yes,
to them.
yes.
Kathy is saying, "Can I bring the lovebirds in here?" When she's scared, "Can we take the lovebirds with us?" She says they're the only two birds that never attack anyone. Now, I thought there was a moment where they would, because when they're in their cage, they're kind of freaking out for a second.
Yes. Yep.
So I wondered, just in interpretation, like if they were to get out of their cage, would the lovebirds be violent, or are they supposed to symbolize the sort of coming together to combat the problem in the world type thing? Like, what's your interpretation on the lovebirds?
Well, I've wondered because there's a moment in town where the neighborhood basically is accusing Melanie of causing all of this, because that's what's interesting is the bird attacks start when Melanie gets into town with the lovebirds. So that's kind of like a conspiracy theory for me, is like, is this related to Melanie somehow? Did she bring these lovebirds? Did that change the energy there for the birds, that there are these new birds there, or were they sick, or was there a curse on them? I mean, you could go down the rabbit hole with this, but I did think that was interesting that the attack started with the arrival of Melanie and the lovebirds. So that absolutely could be, because they never get overly violent. I think there's a little moment where they start freaking out in their cage, but they're both still alive, by the end of it. So I think that's a good question. I think that's just probably up to all of us to figure out in our own minds what those mean. But for me, I don't want to point fingers at Melanie. I think that hopefully it was just all just a random act, that the birds were sick of our shit and were ready to attack. But yeah, if you add in, if you want to take that other route where maybe there was something mystical or supernatural about those lovebirds. Because it does make you wonder the timing of everything.
And if they, so let's speak hypothetically, if there was a fantastical element to it with like there being a curse or something mystical about the lovebirds that kind of causes this, do you think that would like, would you still look at the movie the same with the same praise, or do you think that would take anything away if it was more mystical and a little less grounded?
I think for me, I mean, I'm such an open mind, so I'm here for whatever story there is. But I think for me, I just love how natural this horror is. That's part of it for me, that it's just an everyday horror, literally. All of us see birds almost every day. We're walking to our car, we see birds. So for me, I think I like the idea of it just being the birds. Deciding to take back their land. I have a feeling, unless the National Guard or something is going into Bodega Bay, I feel like at the end of the movie, the birds had claimed Bodega Bay as their own. So that's kind of what I mean, is like, I feel like it's more of a natural thing, where they're like, this is our home, this is where we're safe, and they were looking at all the humans as being the ones getting in the way of them having their new home. So for me, it's more magical with it just being the birds as they are. But yeah, I mean, who knows, in another parallel universe, I think it would be quite an interesting story if it was like some priestess put a curse on these birds, because it really so closely followed Melanie and where she went. So that would be an interesting little conspiracy or fan theory to kind of delve into,
Now
because
that,
you just don't get any of that information. So
yep. Well, now that I'm thinking about it, I mentioned it earlier, but when Melanie is sitting outside of the schoolhouse just on the bench smoking a cigarette, the crows do like flock behind her.
yep, one at a time. That's one of the best build-up moments in the whole movie for me, is that particular scene.
And I think that it's probably one of the biggest scare payoffs is the schoolhouse attack when they run and these birds are just coming at them in that shot of the birds across the skyline as they run down the hill is just insanity.
Yeah. And also, kudos to the whole filmmaking team for this being from 63 and the way they filmed all of this. It's really very well done. But yeah, highly recommend it. And that scene where you just see one crow and then two crows and then four and then eight, and then there's a whole murder of crows, a whole gaggle of them right there. That just is kind of sums up the suspense of the whole movie. You get so many moments like that, and again, the attacks seem random, and there's gaps of time in between the attacks, and they're just not super predictable. It's not something. It doesn't seem like there's something setting them off. They weren't able to make a pattern throughout this movie, but how can you? It's such a short time. That's the other amazing thing about that. Literally 48 hours or so, because Melanie stays over. So it's only about a day or two. She was only planning to be there for a few hours, and it becomes a couple of days. But in that tiny amount of time, 2 days essentially, you watch a whole town become a ghost town. The birds fl make everybody flee. So that is the power of nature. That is the power of nature that we should all be reminded of. And the birds, that's just one part of nature. You have the ocean, you have warmth, you have fire, you have all of these incredible pieces, so many animals all around us all the time. We are not the most powerful thing. We're not. And this movie is such a reminder of that.
And it also causes the town to turn on each other. The scene in the restaurant is kind of where everything comes to a head. People want to leave, and they'll get in the car with strangers that they don't know who have also had a drink or so.
Oh, I loved that. He's like, okay, I'll drive you and your kids. Finishes his scotch or whatever it is. For some reason, I look at it as a scotch. And then hops in the car to drive them off, but he doesn't get that far, unfortunately.
Nope. And she also is like, "Are you ready?" And he goes, "I haven't finished my drink." Like he's not the most friendly. But that, I think that's also where the woman turns on Melanie and says, "You brought this on us."
Because, and this is something that we do as a human society, we have to point fingers at people. If something is not going our way, if something scary is happening, we have a really horrible habit of pointing those fingers when really we all just need to come together and figure out how to survive it. That's what that is. So it's just, there's lots of messages you could get from this movie, honestly. But no matter what you're looking for, if you're looking for suspense, horror, like I said, there's some drama in there. There's strong female characters. Mitch is a fun character too. Their little banter and back and forth is very unique to me. I think it's all around a great movie. It's right at 2 hours on the dot, which to me, I watched an hour one night, hour the next day. Very easy watch. Highly recommended, and I think it's a great first movie in our Hitchcock series to kick things off.
Absolutely. And I forget, was this your first watch or you had seen this before?
This is my second watch of it, but I didn't really remember it very well. It's been like 10 years probably since I had seen it. So, but yeah, so that was my second time watching it. And what I want to ask everybody listening, for those of you who don't know, we have a Facebook group where you can join and we can all chat and stay in touch. So, Midnight Terrors Podcast group on Facebook. I would like you to send in your recommendations for what Hitchcock movie you would like us to do next, as part of our Hitchcock series. Maybe a few months from now, but just send those recommendations in so we can go ahead and pick one, because you'll definitely see that coming down the line at some point in 2025.
Absolutely. We can make a post in the Facebook group about that too.
We could even do a poll, like how Charleston Society of Horror does their polls for their monthly book club pick. Yes, again, that's a plug for our wonderful local horror book club here, which we are actually reading a Grady Hendrix book right now, and we're going to hopefully join them on Saturday if the snow works with us here. But they like to do polls for their book club picks, and they have people add options to it. So maybe we could set it up that way. So if you don't see your pick on there, add it, because maybe it'll end up getting picked. And y'all know we're gonna do Psycho and Bates Motel at some point. So just go ahead and not even worry about throwing that one in there, because that's going to be happening.
Absolutely. Yeah, we should do a poll and also a plug to send us an email at midnightterroristpodcast@gmail.com if you want to hear us talk about a movie that we haven't covered yet that you would like us to discuss. We're always looking to expand horizons. I think The Birds is a great way to start. But I think that's all I got for the birds. Jules, you got anything else you want to add before we close it out?
Before we do our other shameless plugs. No, I
Maybe
mean,
not
really,
so shameless at this point.
not so shameless. And we've already worked in a couple, so it'll be shorter. But no, I mean, just highly recommend it. Let us know what you think. Especially again, given it was in the 60s, I'm impressed with how progressive it feels, for it being 62 or so years old. So highly recommend it. But for our other plugs, check out Charleston Terrify. That's a blog here in Charleston by my sister Katie that loops in all different horror events here around Charleston. We have Spooky Empire, which is not returning to Charleston this year, but we have their Florida shows and hopefully a return in 2026. We already mentioned our lovely book club, Charleston Society of Horror. Obviously, Charleston's Absent Friends. We have a Rocky Horror Show coming up February 7th, I believe it is, whatever the first Friday is. In February, we're going to do a Valentine's Day themed Rocky Horror with a dating game beforehand. We have Southern Screams. They're in a pause right now, much deserved after their haunt season. And then they also do an annual Christmas event at Holy City Brewing. Got a shout out Frothy Beer Brewing Company too. They host us every other month this year. So look out. We have our first live event of 2025 next month, and that's going to be love, jealousy, and killer couples in the horror genre. So check that out. We always post events on socials. So Midnight Terrors Podcast on Facebook, Charleston's Absent Friends on Facebook and Instagram. We reshare all of the MTP stuff. So join us over there. And then that leads us into the big plug of Kevin.
Best of Charleston is back. Last year Midnight Terrors Podcast was lucky enough to be crowned best local podcast in Charleston. We are giving it a go again. Charleston's Absent Friends is also running for best performing arts group. So we also wanted to line this episode up with that as well as sort of a Jules, you're obviously a co-host of MTP, but it's always fun to add in the crossover element of CAF and MTP because we're so closely linked and always working together on projects. Nominations. So this is coming out the evening of January 23rd. Nominations end on the at the end of the day on January 24th. So the Friday after this comes out. So this is the nomination round. So what you got to do right now, and I will have links in the description for this. The last few episodes, I've actually linked the Best of Charleston for Charleston's Absent Friends and MTP in the description. So what you got to do is go over there, use your email, and write in your nominations. So if you would like to, we would love to have your support for Charleston's Absent Friends to be nominated as Best Performing Arts Group. And Midnight Terrors podcast to be nominated for best local podcast. It's all about spreading the word. At the end of the day, winning doesn't really matter, but it's all about spreading the word, growing the community. And you all listening know that we have our community here that we want people to be a part of. So if you'd like to have your voice there, we would love to have those nominations. And hopefully, Jules will be advancing to the next round, and we'll give it a final push again.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Midnight Terrors Podcast and Charleston's Absent Friends. We're two sides of the same beating black bloody heart. We do a lot together. And at the end of the day, we're both nonprofits with the same mission, which is love and kindness connected through horror and related things to that. So everybody, as this year gets into full swing, no matter what issues you're facing in your life, in your country, in your state, in your world, whatever it is, just remember that there are people like us that are here with their arms wide open, ready to welcome you for exactly who you are, whatever that is, whatever pronouns you use, whatever color your skin is, whatever religion, as long as you are practicing love and practicing kindness, we will welcome you always, always. Please come and find us at a live event, whether that's a Rocky show. We do a ton of different shows this year at CAF. MTP has their live events. I encourage you, if you're scared, if you have social anxiety, welcome to the club. Almost, I would say 78.25% of us here at MTP and CAF are anxious beings. So please come. You will not regret it. Worst case, you had a night out, you can go home, never do it again. Best case, you find a chosen family and some of the best friends of your life. So I encourage all of you listening, if you've been, maybe, I don't know, just come on out. Come on out to the February event and we'd love to see you. And thank you all for nominating us. Kevin, the fact that you won Best Local Podcast last year, it just speaks to this amazing community you've put together, and I'm happy to be a part of it. So cheers to another wonderful year. Again, it's not about winning, it's about finding our people and giving people safe spaces.
Absolutely. And Jules, thank you for joining me for this. And we're often doing these, we're often recording together when we're doing a live event. So there's like a million and one things going on. So now that it's more concentrated here, I will always take any opportunity to sing your praises and just thank you for being a part of MTP. A lot of people probably, won't know as much as I do that there's a lot of stuff that you do for MTP. You're very active on socials. You are a master networker. You design the graphics for the live events, and you're bringing a lot of new people to it. And you're just a wonderful co-host and just a huge light to everyone that gets to hear you talk and just get to meet you and call you a friend as I do. So thank you for everything. And MTP wouldn't be where it is without you.
Well, I appreciate it. Never forget, there's a light over at the Frankenstein place, but watch out for the birds.
Yeah. There's also probably Jules' Frankenfurter over at the Frankenstein place.
Oh, yeah. That reminds me, I need to shave my legs because we have a show coming up. So.
Everybody, be sure to check out Charleston's Absent Friends on social media. There's a lot going on over there. We got some Shakespeare, Midsummer Night's Dream coming out. We got a new shadow cast for The Room coming out. Audition link is open for that now. Rocky coming up every first Friday of every month. Princess Bride coming up. We're working, with MTP and just a lot of different people. There's a real fun spooky family here in Charleston. But also, if you're on the internet listening, like, we want to talk to you. We've got people that we met at Spooky who are up in I believe Iowa that are like regularly interacting with us. So wherever you are, we want to talk to you.
Yes, I just saw him comment and I recognized him instantly from Spooky. So, it's wonderful. We mean it when we say we'll be part of your family and you're part of ours. So thank you guys. Thank you for the nominations and let's keep doing what we're doing. Here's to another wonderful year.
Absolutely. And here's to more episodes. I'm excited, Jules, for you to be on the show more. So for next month, how do you feel about talking about we're reading The Final Girl Support Group from Grady Hendrix. So how do you feel about talking about a very underrated meta comedic slasher film?
You had me at comedic slasher. So, I love funny and I love horror. So it sounds right up my alley. And I have not seen this one. So I am excited. I'm going in completely blind and I'm excited to delve into it and chat with you about it. And I'll have to go ahead and think about March's pick.
Absolutely. So stay tuned for that next month, everybody. But thank you for listening. Check out the description with the links for Best of Charleston. And be sure to check out Charleston's Absent Friends on social media. And if you want to get in touch with the Midnight Terrors podcast, you can find us on Facebook under Midnight Terrors Podcast. You can shoot us an email at midnightterrorspodcast@gmail.com. You can check out our Linktree, which has our T Public store on there if you want to check out some merch. And you can also join that lovely Facebook group, Midnight Terrors Podcast, where you can talk with myself and Jules and all of our friends and family about horror. It's a good, crazy, fun time in there. So thank you, everybody, for listening. We love you all, and we will see you again very soon on the Midnight Terrors Podcast. Peace.